Chapter 15. Oh, geez, they're gonna eat her, thought Gregor, springing to his feet and smacking his head into the ceiling. Ow! It had been a mistake to take off his hard hat to sleep. A hand grasped his shoulder to steady him, and he made out Vicus with a finger pressed to his lips. Shh! Halt them not, he whispered urgently. But they're gonna hurt her, Gregor whispered back. He hunched down and put a hand to his head. He could feel a big lump already rising out of his scalp. No, Gregor, they honor her. They honor Boots in a manner most sacred and rare, whispered Solovet from somewhere next to Vicus. Gregor looked back at the roaches and tried to make sense of it. Boots didn't seem in any immediate danger. None of the bugs was actually touching her. They just swayed and turned and bowed in their slow, rhythmic dance. There was something else, the solemnity of the scene, the complete silence, the absorption. It hit him. The roaches weren't just honoring Boots. They were worshipping her. What are they doing? Gregor asked. It is the ring dance. It is said the crawlers perform it only in the greatest secrecy for ones they believe to be chosen, answered Vicus. In our history, they have only performed it for one other human, and that was Sandwich. Chosen for what? Whispered Gregor, worried. He hoped the cockroaches didn't think they could keep Boots just because they did some dance around her. Chosen to give them time, said Vicus simply, as if that explained it all. Gregor translated that in his head to mean chosen to give them life. Maybe it was something simpler. From the moment they'd landed in the Underland, the roaches had felt a special connection to Boots. If they'd just found him, he'd have had a one-way ticket to the rats. End of story. But Boots had befriended them so quickly. She hadn't been repulsed, or superior, or scared. Gregor thought the fact that she had liked the roaches had made a great impression on them. Most of the humans had such a low opinion of them. Then there was that strange thing about recognizing temp. He still couldn't explain that. The roaches did a series of turns and landed flat on the ground facing Boots. Then, circle by circle, they melted away into the darkness. Boots watched them go without comment. When the chamber had cleared, she gave a head-splitting yawn and padded over to Gregor. I seepy, she said. Then she curled up against him and nodded right off. Gregor took the flashlight from her hand, and in its beam saw that all the other Underlanders were awake, staring at them. She's sleepy, he said, as if nothing unusual had happened. He clicked off the light. When they woke, the roaches announced that Temp and Tick would be joining the quest. There was no doubt in anyone's mind that they were coming because of Boots. Gregor was torn between being very proud and wanting to laugh his head off. It turned out Boots was special weaponry after all. The party quickly readied itself to depart. Temp and Tick absolutely refused to ride on any bat without Boots. This caused a brief argument because Boots had to ride with Gregor, and that meant one bat had to carry both the Overlanders and the roaches. The bats could handle the load, but it meant four inexperienced flyers would be alone on one bat. Vicus gave the job to Henry's big black bat, Ares, as he was both strong and agile, and Henry rode with Luxa. Ares was instructed to fly above the others just in case one of the roaches fell off and had to be caught before it hit the ground. None of this talk seemed to relax Temp and Tick, who were obviously terrified at the idea of soaring through wide-open spaces high above the ground. Gregor found himself trying to reassure them, which was ironic, since he didn't much like flying either. He also wished he could have any bat but Ares. Henry's bat probably disliked him as much as Henry did. They didn't have time for breakfast, but Marith passed out chunks of cake and dried beef to eat on the journey. Vikas told Gregor they would be flying several hours before they took a break, so he put a second diaper over Boots's first one. He also repositioned her in the backpack so that she was looking backward instead of over his shoulder. That way, she could chatter with Temp and Tick and maybe distract them from their fear. Gregor gingerly climbed up on Ares's back and dangled his legs off the bat's shoulders. Temp and Tick scrambled on behind and clung to Ares's back fur for dear life. Gregor thought he saw the bat wince a little, but Ares didn't say anything. The bats hardly ever spoke out loud, though. It seemed to require a lot of effort. They probably talked to one another in squeaks too high for human ears to hear.
"We must now travel to the land of the spinners," said Vikas. "Remember how frequently the rats patrol this area."
"Fly close together. We may have need of one another's protection," said Solovet. "To the air!" The bats took off. Boots was pleased as punch with her new traveling companions. She sang her whole repertoire of songs, which included Twinkle Twinkle Little Star, Hey Diddle Diddle, The Itsy Bitsy Spider, the Alphabet Song, and, of course, Patty Cake, Patty Cake. Having finished, she sang them again, and again, and again. On about the 19th round, Gregor decided to teach her Row, Row, Row Your Boat, just for a little variety. Boots picked it up immediately and then tried to teach it to the roaches. She didn't seem to mind their off-key voices, although Gregor could feel the muscles in Ares's neck getting tighter with each verse. Gregor could tell the roaches' domains sprawled over a much larger area than Regalia or the bats' caves. The humans and bats had small, densely populated lands that could be protected easily. The roaches lived across miles and miles of the underland. How did they keep themselves safe from attack with all this space to defend? The answer came to him as they flew over a valley that held thousands of roaches. The crawlers had numbers, huge numbers, compared with the humans. If they were attacked, they could afford to lose more fighters, and with so much space, they could retreat endlessly and make the rats follow them. Gregor thought about the roaches in their kitchen at home. They didn't fight. They ran for it. His mom swatted a lot of them, but they always came back. After what seemed like an eternity, Gregor felt Ares coasting in for a landing. They settled down on the bank of a lazy, shallow river. Gregor hopped off and onto something soft and spongy. He reached down to investigate, and his hand came up filled with a grayish, green, leafy vine. Plants! Plants grew down here without the help of the gaslight the Underlanders used. "How does this grow without the light?" he asked Vikas, holding out a handful of the stuff.
"It has light," said Vikas, pointing into the river. "There is fire from the earth."
Gregor peered into the water and saw tiny jets of light shooting out of the river bottom. Fish darted in and out of a variety of plant life. The long vines of certain plants crept onto the banks. "Oh, they're like miniature volcanoes," thought Gregor. "This river runs through Regalia as well. Our cattle live off the plants, but they are unfit for humans to eat," said Solovet. Gregor had been eating beef jerky all morning without wondering what the cows ate. He could probably spend years in the Underland figuring out how it worked. Not that he wanted to. Cockroaches, who were fishing along the banks, had a quick exchange with Temp and Tick and pulled several large fish out of the river with their mouths. Marith cleaned them and set them on the torches to grill. Gregor set Boots down to stretch her legs and asked the cockroaches to keep an eye on her. They ran up and down the bank, steering her away from the water and letting her ride on their backs. Word of her arrival spread quickly, and soon dozens of bugs appeared. They settled down just to watch the princess. When the food was cooked, Vikas made a point of inviting Temp and Tick to join them.
"It is time," he said in response to Henry's frown. "It is time those of the prophecy became of one journey, of one purpose, of one mind. All are equal here. Temp and Tick still sat off to the side, behind Boots, but they ate with everyone else.
It is not far now, said Vicus, pointing at a small tunnel. One could make it shortly even on foot.
To my dad? Asked Gregor.
No. To the spinners. We must persuade two to join us on the quest, said Vicus.
Oh yeah, the spinners, said Gregor. He hoped they were more into the trip than the roaches had been. They were just finishing up the meal when all five bats jerked their heads up.
Rats!
Hissed Ares, and everyone started moving. Except for Temp and Tick, all the roaches vanished into the shallow tunnels that led away from the riverbank. Vicus thrust Boots into Gregor's backpack and shoved them toward the tunnel he had pointed out earlier.
Run! He ordered.
Gregor tried to object, but Vicus cut him off.
Run, Gregor. The rest of us are expendable. You are not.
The old man vaulted onto his bat and joined the other Underlanders in the air just as a squad of six rats stampeded onto the riverbank. The leader, a gnarled gray rat with a diagonal scar across his face, pointed at Gregor and hissed,
"Kill him!"
Stranded on the riverbank without a weapon, Gregor had no choice but to sprint for the mouth of the tunnel. Temp and Tick scurried after him. He glanced back for a second and saw Vicus knock the scarred rat into the river with the hilt of his sword. The other Underlanders, blades flashing, were attacking the five remaining rats.
Run, Gregor,
ordered Solovet in a rough voice so unlike the quiet one he was used to.
Make haste, make you make haste, urged Temp and Tick.
Using his flashlight, Gregor started down the tunnel. It was just high enough that he could run upright. He realized that he had lost Temp and Tick somewhere and turned back to see the entire tunnel, floor to ceiling, filling up with roaches. They weren't attacking the rats. They were using their bodies to form a barricade that would be nearly impossible to penetrate.
Oh no, thought Gregor. They're just going to let themselves be killed.
He turned back to help them, but the roaches nearest him insisted,
Run! Run with the princess!
They were right. He had to go. He had to get Boots out of there. He had to save his dad. Maybe he even had to save the Underland from the rats. He didn't know. But right now he could no more get through the 50-foot wall of cockroaches to fight the rats than the rats could get to him. He took off down the tunnel, setting a pace he thought he could maintain for half an hour. At 20 minutes, he turned a corner and ran straight into an enormous spider web.
Chapter 16. He ripped his face off the sticky ropes, and it felt like someone had yanked strips of adhesive tape off his skin.
Ow!
He said.
He freed his flashlight arm, but the other remained enmeshed in the web. Boots was on his back, so she hadn't got caught.
Hello? He called. Is anyone there? Hello?
He shone his flashlight around, but all he could see was web.
I am Gregor the Overlander. I come in peace, he said.
I come in peace? Where'd he get that?
Probably from some old movie.
Anybody home?
He felt a light tugging on his sandals and looked down. A huge spider was wrapping his feet together with a steady stream of silk.
Hey!
Yelled Gregor, trying to free his feet. But in seconds, the spider had spun its way up to his knees.
You don't understand. I'm the warrior. In the prophecy, I'm the one who calls.
The spider busily worked its way up his body.
Oh, man, thought Gregor. It's going to cover us completely.
He felt the arm that was caught in the web tighten up against his body.
Geeko, squeaked Boots.
The silk ropes pressed her against his back as they encircled his chest.
Vicus sent me,
yelled Gregor, and for the first time,
The spider paused. He quickly followed up. Yeah, Vicus sent me, and he's on his way, and he's going to be really mad you're wrapping us up. He waved his free arm with the flashlight for emphasis and caught the spider full in the face with the light. It skittered back a few yards, and Gregor got his first good look at the arachnid. 6 beady black eyes, bristly legs, and massive jaws that ended in curved, pointed fangs. He quickly diverted the flashlight beam. No point in making it angry. "So, do you know Vicus?" he asked. "He should be here any minute to have some official meeting with your king, queen. Do you guys have a king or queen? Or maybe it's something else. We have a president, but that's different because you have to vote for them." He paused. "So, do you think you could unwrap us now?" The spider leaned down and snapped a thread with its jaws. Gregor and Boots shot up 50 feet in the air and yo-yoed up and down like they were on a big rubber band. "Hey!" Gregor yelled. "Hey!" His lunch sloshed around in his stomach. Eventually, the bouncing stopped. Gregor shone the flashlight around him. In every direction he could see spiders. Some were working busily. Others seemed asleep. Every single one of them was ignoring him. This was new. The roaches and bats had greeted him civilly enough. A whole crowd of people in the stadium had fallen silent when he appeared, and the rats had gone into a rage when they'd met. But the spiders? They couldn't care less. He yelled stuff at them for a while. Nice stuff. Crazy stuff. Annoying stuff. They didn't react. He got Boots to sing a couple of rounds of "The Itsy Bitsy Spider," since she had a special way with bugs. No response. Finally, he just gave up and watched them. An unlucky insect flew into their web. A spider ran over and drove its wicked fangs into the bug. It went still. Poison, thought Gregor. The spider quickly wrapped the insect in silk, broke it into pieces, and shot some kind of juice inside it. Gregor looked away when the spider started sucking out the bug's liquefied insides. Ugh, that could have been us. That still could be us, he thought. He wished Vicus and the others would show up. But would they show up? What had happened back on the riverbank? Had they been able to fight off the rats? Had anybody been hurt? Or worse, killed? He remembered Vicus's ordering him to run. "The rest of us are expendable. You are not." He must have been talking about the prophecy. They could always find more crawlers, flyers, and spinners. Nerissa might be able to stand in if something happened to Luxa or Henry. Or maybe they would make someone else the king or queen. But Gregor and Boots, two overlanders with a dad imprisoned by rats, they were irreplaceable. Gregor thought grimly of the people sacrificing themselves back on the riverbank. He should have stayed and fought, even if he didn't stand much of a chance. They were risking their lives because they thought he was the warrior, but he wasn't. Surely that was clear by now. Minutes dragged by. Maybe the whole party had been wiped out, and he and Boots were on their own. Maybe the spiders knew that, and they were just letting them live so they could be nice and fresh when they decided to eat them.
"Gigo?" said Boots.
"Yeah, Boots," said Gregor.
"We go home," she asked plaintively. "See Mama."
"Well, we have to get Daddy first," he said, trying to sound optimistic, even though they were dangling helplessly in a spider's lair.
"Dada?"
said Boots curiously. She knew their father from photos, though she'd never seen him in person.
"See Dada?"
"We get Dada, then we go home," said Gregor.
"See Mama?"
Boots insisted. Images of their mom began to make Gregor ache with sadness.
"See Mama?"
A spider near them began to make a humming sound that was picked up by the other creatures. It was a soothing, soft melody. Gregor tried to remember the tune so he could play it for his dad on his saxophone. His dad played too,
Jazz, mostly. He'd bought Gregor his first saxophone, a used one from the pawn shop, when he was 7, and started teaching him to play it. Gregor had just begun lessons at school when his dad had dropped out of sight and became a prisoner of the rats, who probably hated music. What were the rats doing to his dad anyway? He tried to distract himself with more positive thoughts, but given the circumstances, failed. When Henry materialized on the stone floor below him, Gregor wanted to cry with relief. "He lives!" Henry called out, looking genuinely happy to see him. From somewhere in the darkness, Gregor heard Vikas call out, "Free you the Overlander, free you!" He felt himself being lowered to the ground. When his feet hit the stone, he fell on his stomach, unable to stand on his wrapped legs. They instantly gathered around him, cutting the silk off with their swords. Even Luxa and Henry helped. Tick and Temp chewed through the cords around Boots's pack. Gregor counted the bats. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. He could see several wounds, but everybody was alive. "We thought you lost," said Marith, who was bleeding freely from his thigh. "No, I couldn't get lost. The tunnel came straight here," said Gregor, kicking his legs free happily. "Not lost in direction," said Luxa. "Lost forever." Gregor realized she meant dead. "What happened with the rats?" he asked.
"All killed," said Vikas. "You need not fear that they have seen you."
"It's worse if they see me?" asked Gregor. "Why? They can smell I'm an Overlander from miles away. They know I'm here."
"But only the dead ones know you resemble your father, that you are a son of the sun," said Vikas.
Gregor remembered how Fangor and Shed had reacted when they'd seen his face in the torchlight.
"Mark you Shed his shade?"
They hadn't just wanted to kill him because he was an Overlander. They thought he was the warrior, too. He wanted to tell Vikas about that, but a score of spiders were descending around them and perching in nearby webs. One magnificent creature with beautifully striped legs swung down directly in front of Vikas. He bowed very low.
"Greetings, Queen Weavox."
The spider rubbed her front legs over her chest as if she were playing the harp. An eerie voice came out of her, although there was no movement of her mouth.
"Greetings, Lord Vikas."
"Meet you, Gregor the Overlander, meet you," said Vikas, indicating Gregor.
"He makes much noise," said the queen distastefully, her front legs moving across her chest again.
Gregor realized that was how she talked, by making vibrations on her body. She sounded sort of like Mr. Johnson in apartment 4Q, who'd had some kind of operation and talked through a hole in his neck. Only scary.
"The Overlander ways are odd," said Vikas, shooting Gregor a look that told him not to object.
"Why come you?"
strummed Queen Weavox. Vikas told the whole tale in 10 sentences, using a soft voice, so apparently you spoke to spiders quickly and quietly. Screaming at them endlessly had been counterproductive. The queen considered the story a moment.
"As it is, Vikas, we will not drink. Web them."
A horde of spiders surrounded them. Gregor watched a gorgeous, gauzy funnel of silk grow up around them as if by magic. It isolated the party and blocked all else from view. The spiders stopped spinning when it reached 30 feet. 2 took positions as sentries at the top. It all happened in under a minute. Everyone looked at Vikas, who sighed. "You knew it would not be simple," said Solovet gently.
"Yes. But I had hoped with the recent trade agreement..."
Vikas trailed off.
"I hoped too high."
"We still breathe," said Marith encouragingly. "That is no small thing with the spinners." "What's going on?" said Gregor. "Aren't they coming with us?"
"No, Gregor," said Solovet. "We are their prisoners."
Chapter 17.
Prisoners, exclaimed Gregor. Are you at war with the spiders too?
Oh no, said Marith. We are on peaceful terms with the spinners. We trade with them. We do not invade each other's lands. But it would be an exaggeration to call them our friends.
I'll say, said Gregor. So did everybody know they would lock us up except me?
He had trouble keeping the irritation out of his voice. He was getting tired of finding out about things after the fact.
I am sorry, Gregor, said Vicus. I have worked long to build bridges between ourselves and the spinners. I thought perhaps they would be more agreeable, but I overestimated my influence with them.
He looked weary and old. Gregor hadn't meant to make him feel worse than he already did.
No, they really respect you. I mean, I think they were going to eat me until I mentioned your name.
Vicus brightened a little.
Truly? Well, that is something. Where there is life, there is hope.
That's so weird. That's what my grandma always says, said Gregor. He laughed, and somehow that broke the tension.
Kigo fish diaper,
said Boots crankily. She tugged at her pants.
Yes, Boots, fresh diaper, said Gregor. She hadn't been changed for ages. He dug through the pack Dulcet had given him and realized he was down to two diapers.
Uh-oh, he said. I'm almost out of catch cloths.
Well, you could not be in a better place. The spinners weave all our catch cloths, said Solovet.
How come they're not sticky? Asked Gregor, touching his face.
Spinners can make 6 different kinds of silk, some sticky, some soft as Boots's skin. They make our garments as well.
Really? Said Gregor. Do you think they'd let us have more catch cloths, even if we're prisoners?
I doubt it not. It is not the spider's goal to antagonize us, said Solovet. Only to hold us until they can determine what to do.
She called up to a guard, and in a few minutes, 2 dozen diapers came down on a thread. The spider also sent down 3 woven baskets filled with clean water. Solovet began to work her way around the group, cleaning wounds and patching people up. Luxa, Henry, and Marith paid close attention, as if she were teaching a class. Gregor realized the ability to heal battle wounds was probably important if you lived down here. Solovet began by cleaning the gash on Marith's thigh and stitching it up with a needle and thread. Gregor winced on Marith's behalf, but the guard's face was pale and set. 2 bats required stitches on torn wings, and though they made a great effort to remain still while Solovet slid the needle in and out of their skin, the process was clearly agonizing for them. Once all obvious bleeding had been stopped, Solovet turned to Gregor.
Let us attend to your face now.
Gregor touched his cheek and found that welts had formed where the webs had ripped off. Solovet soaked a catch cloth in water and placed it on his face. Gregor had to grit his teeth to keep from screaming.
I know it burns, said Solovet. But you must wash the glue from your skin or it will fester.
Fester? Said Gregor. That sounded awful.
If you could stand to splash water upon your face, it would be a more painful but faster process, said Solovet. Gregor took a deep breath and dunked his whole head into one of the baskets of water.
Ah!
He screamed silently and came up gasping. After 5 or 6 dunks, the pain faded.
Solovet nodded approvingly and gave him a small clay pot of ointment to dab on his face.
While he gingerly applied the medicine, she cleaned and bound a series of smaller wounds and forced an uncooperative Vicus to let her wrap his wrist. Finally, she turned to Temp and Tick.
Crawlers, need you any assistance from me?
Boots pointed out a bent antenna on one of the roaches.
Temp Boo Boo, she said.
No, Princess, we heal ourselves, said Temp.
Gregor was sorry Temp was injured, but on the plus side, he could now tell the roaches apart.
Bandage, insisted Boots, and reached out to grab the crooked antenna.
No, Boots, said Gregor, blocking her hand. No bandage on Temp.
Bandage!
Boots gave Gregor a scowl and pushed him away.
Oh, great, thought Gregor. Here we go.
In general, Boots was a very good-natured two-year-old, but she was still two, and every so often she would throw a tantrum that left the rest of the family exhausted. Usually, it happened when she was tired and hungry. Gregor dug in the pack. Hadn't Dulcet said something about treats? He pulled out a cookie. Cookie, Boots? She reluctantly took the cookie and sat down to gnaw on it. Maybe he had headed off the worst.
Hates us, the princess hates us? Asked Tick worriedly.
Oh, no, said Gregor. She just gets like this sometimes. My mom calls it the terrible twos. Sometimes she throws a fit for no reason.
Boots scowled at everybody and drummed her feet on the ground.
Hates us, the princess hates us, murmured Temp sadly.
Baby roaches probably didn't have tantrums.
No, really, she still thinks you're great, promised Gregor. Just give her some space.
He hoped the roaches wouldn't get so hurt by Boots's behavior that they'd want to go home. Not that anyone was going anywhere right now.
Vicus gestured him over to where the others had gathered. He spoke in a whisper.
Gregor, my wife fears the spinners may pass on our whereabouts to the rats. She advises that we escape with all speed.
I'm good with that, said Gregor. But how?
Boots came up behind him and gave his arm a pinch for no reason.
No, Boots, he said. No pinching.
More cookie,
she said, tugging on him.
No, not for pinchers. Cookies are not for pinchers, said Gregor firmly.
Her lower lip began to tremble. She marched away from him, plunked herself down on the floor, and began to kick at the pack.
Okay, sorry, what? What's the plan? Said Gregor, turning back to the group. Can we just cut our way through the web and run?
No. Outside this funnel web are scores of spinners ready to repair a hole and attack with poison fang. If we flee upward, they will leap on us from above, whispered Solovet.
What's that leave? Said Gregor.
Only one resort. We must damage the web so fully and so rapidly they cannot repair it, nor will it hold their weight, said Solovet. She paused. Someone must perform the coiler.
Everyone looked at Luxa. So Gregor looked at her, too. Her golden bat, which stood behind her, dipped its head down and touched her neck.
We can do it, said Luxa softly.
We do not insist, Luxa. The danger, particularly at the top, is very great. But in truth, you are our best hope, said Vicus unhappily.
Henry put his arm around her shoulder. They can do it. I have seen them in training. They have both speed and accuracy.
Luxa nodded resolutely.
We can do it. Let us not wait. Gregor, ride you on Vicus's bat. Vicus, with me. Henry and Marith, take one crawler each, said Solovet.
We need a distraction to cover Luxa, said Marith. I could go through the side.
Not with that leg, said Solovet, her eyes flashing around. And no one goes through the side. It is certain death.
The spinners are very sensitive to noise, said Vicus. It is too bad we have no horns.
Gregor felt a pair of feet drumming angrily into his legs. He turned around and saw Boots on the floor kicking him.
Cut it out, he snapped at her. Do you need a timeout?
No time out. You time out. You time out. Cookie, cookie,
sputtered Boots. She was about to blow any minute.
You need a noise, said Gregor in frustration. I've got a noise for you.
He picked Boots up and wrestled her into the backpack.
No, no, no!
Boots said, her voice rising in pitch and intensity.
Everybody ready? Asked Gregor, pulling a cookie from Dulcet's bag.
The Underlanders weren't exactly sure what he was doing, but in seconds they were prepared for takeoff. Solovet gave him a nod.
We are ready.
Gregor held up the cookie.
Hey, Boots, said Gregor. Want a cookie?
No cookie! No cookie! No, no, no!
Said Boots, way past the point of being pacified.
Okay, said Gregor.
Then I'll eat it. And making sure she could see, he stuck the whole cookie in his mouth.
Mine!
Screamed Boots.
Mine, mine, mine!
It was an eardrum-piercing shriek that rattled his brain.
Go, you Luxa! Cried Solovet, and the girl took off on her bat.
Now Gregor could understand why the coiler was such a big deal. Luxa was rising up along the web, spinning and twisting at a dizzying rate. She held her sword out straight above her head. It was slicing the funnel to shreds. Only an extraordinary and flexible rider could have pulled off a move like that.
Wow, said Gregor.
He jumped on Vicus's big gray bat.
Mine!
Screeched Boots.
Mine!
Above him, he could see Luxa spinning and slicing. The other Underlanders were following her, cutting straight up the sides of the funnel web. Gregor brought up the rear with Boots and her blinding screams. At the top of the funnel, the golden bat hung in space performing an intricate upside-down figure eight. Under the protection of Luxa's flashing sword, the Underlanders zipped out to freedom. Gregor was the only one still in the funnel when it happened. From above, a jet of silk shot down, encircling Luxa's sword arm and jerking her from her bat. The pair of striped legs reeled her in like a fish. The fangs of Queen Weavox opened to receive Luxa's neck. Chapter 18. Gregor's mouth dropped open in horror. Luxa was seconds away from dying. She knew it, too. She was writhing in terror, trying to bite through the silk rope at her wrist with her teeth, but it was too strong. He felt around desperately for a weapon. What did he have? Diapers? Cookies? Oh, why hadn't they given him a sword? He was the stupid warrior, wasn't he? His fingers dug in the leather bag and closed around the root beer can.
Root beer!
He yanked out the can, shaking it with all his might.
Attack! Attack!
He yelled. Just as the fangs were about to pierce Luxa's throat, he flew up and popped the soda can top. The stream of root beer shot out and smacked the Spider Queen right in the face. She dropped Luxa and began to claw at her six eyes. Luxa fell and was swept up by her bat. They joined the rest of the Underlanders who were fighting their way back to help.
Blade wheel, commanded Solovet,
and the bats formed into the tight flying circle that had surrounded Gregor when he'd tried to escape from the stadium. The humans extended their swords straight out to the sides, and the formation began to move through the air like a buzz saw. Boots's unearthly shrieks were causing many of the spiders to curl up in cowering balls. Whether it was the noise, the blade wheel, or fear of the root beer, Gregor didn't know. All he knew was that in a few minutes they were flying free and leaving the spiders far behind. Gregor unclenched his legs when he realized he was probably squeezing the life out of his bat. In one hand, he still held the half-empty can of root beer. He would have taken a drink if he'd thought he could swallow. Boots's screams soon became whimpers. She put her head on his shoulder and crashed. She'd been so upset, she still made little gasping sounds in her sleep. Gregor turned and placed a kiss on her curly head. Luxa was stretched out on her bat's back, alive, but wiped out. He saw Solovet and Vikas flying near her, speaking. She nodded, but didn't sit up. They took the lead, and the bats sped even faster into the darkness. They flew a long time down deserted passages. Gregor saw no sign of life, either animal or plant. Eventually, Solovet and Vikas waved them down, and the party landed in a vast cavern at the mouth of a tunnel. Everybody practically fell off the bats and just lay on the ground. Temp and Tick seemed almost comatose from fear. The bats staggered together and pressed into a tight, trembling knot. After a while, Gregor heard himself speak up. "So isn't it time I had a sword?" There was a moment of silence. Then all the Underlanders burst out laughing. They went on and on. Gregor didn't really get the joke, but he laughed along with them, feeling the darkness drain out of his body. The laughter woke Boots, who rubbed her eyes and said cheerfully,
"We're Spider."
Somehow that set everybody off again. Pleased with the response, Boots kept repeating,
"We're Spider! We're Spider!"
to appreciative laughter. "Spider go bye-bye," said Gregor finally. "How about a cookie?"
"Yes,"
said Boots, without a trace of anger over the earlier cookie incident. That was one great thing about her. Once she'd melted down and napped, she transformed back into her own sweet self again. When they realized the princess did not in fact hate them, Temp and Tick rallied and ran around playing tag with her. Merith started to prepare food, but Solovet ordered him to lie down and prop up his leg. She and Vikas made dinner, while Henry and Merith played some kind of card game. Gregor went over to Luxa, who was sitting on a stone ledge. He sat beside her and could feel she was still shaking. "How are you doing?" he asked.
"I am fine," she said in a tight voice.
"That was really cool, that coiler thing you did," he said.
"It was my first time in a real web," confessed Luxa.
"Mine too. Of course, in the Overland, spinners are small and we don't call them our neighbors," said Gregor.
Luxa grimaced. "We do not mix much with spinners."
"Well, that's probably a good thing. I mean, who wants to mix with somebody who spends the whole time thinking about drinking you?" Gregor said.
Luxa looked shocked. "You would not joke so had the queen trapped you."
"Hey, I was hanging there yelling for an hour before you guys decided to show up," said Gregor, "and they really hated me."
Luxa laughed.
"I could tell by what Queen Weavox said." She paused.
Her next words were an effort. "Thank you."
"For what?" he said.
"Saving me with the...
What is this weapon?" She gestured to the root beer can. "It's not a weapon, it's a root beer," Gregor said. He took a swig.
Luxa looked alarmed. "Should you drink it?" she asked.
"Sure, try it," he said.
Gregor offered her the can. She tentatively took a sip, and her eyes widened. "It bubbles on the tongue," she said.
"Yeah, that's why it exploded. I shook up a lot of bubbles. It's safe now. It's just like water." "Go ahead, you can finish it," he said.
And she continued to take tiny, curious sips.
"Anyway, I owed you one," he said. "You saved me from that rat the first night. So we're even."
Luxa nodded but seemed troubled. "There is one other thing. I should not have struck you for trying to escape. I am sorry."
"And I'm sorry I called your home creepy." "It's not like it's all creepy. Some of it's great," he said.
"Am I creepy to you?" asked Luxa.
"Oh no, creepy is like spiders and rats and, you know, things that make chills run down your spine. You're just difficult," said Gregor, trying to be honest but not flat out rude.
"You too. You are difficult to, make do things," said Luxa.
Gregor nodded. but he rolled his eyes when she wasn't looking. It was hard to imagine anyone more stubborn than Luxa. Vicus called them all to dine, and even the roaches felt comfortable enough to join the circle. "I am drinking Gregor's spinner weapon," announced Luxa, holding up the root beer can. He had to explain the root beer all over again, and then everybody had to try a sip. When the can got to Boots, he said, "Well, that's the end of that," thinking she'd guzzle down the last few swallows, but instead, she poured out two little puddles.
"Big bugs," she said, pointing to the first puddle. "Bats," she said, pointing to the second.
Both sets of animals obligingly drank up the root beer.
"I believe Boots to be a natural ambassador," said Vicus, smiling. "She treats all with an equality I myself aspire to. Come, let us eat."
Everyone dug in like they'd never seen food before. When he'd slowed down enough to actually taste his food, Gregor asked the question that had been worrying him since they'd escaped from the spiders. "Can we still go on the quest without the spinners?"
"That is the question," said Vicus. "That is the question we must all consider. Clearly, we cannot expect any spinners to join us willingly."
"We should have seized two when we had a chance," said Henry darkly.
"The prophecy says the spinners must ascend," said Vicus. "However, we know the rats have taken many spinners prisoner. Perhaps we can free a few and persuade them to accompany us. I have often had good results with spinners."
"But you will not be there, Vicus," Sullivet said quietly. "What do you mean?" asked Gregor, feeling his mouth go dry. Vicus paused a moment, taking in the group.
"It is time for those of us not named by the prophecy to return home. Marith, Sullivet, and I will fly after we rest."
Gregor saw his surprise mirrored on Luke's and Henry's faces. "Nothing in the prophecy forbids you to come," said Luxa. "We are not meant to be here, and beyond that we have a war to fight," said Sullivet. The thought of going anywhere without Vicus and Sullivet filled Gregor with panic. "But you can't leave us. I mean, we don't even know where we're going," said Gregor. "Do you guys know where we're going?" he asked Luxa and Henry. They both shook their heads. "See?
You will manage. Henry and Luxa are well trained, and you show great resourcefulness," said Sullivet. She spoke simply and definitely. She was thinking of the war, of the bigger picture, not of them.
Gregor instinctively knew he could not change her mind. He turned to Vicus.
"You can't leave. We need you. We need someone who knows what they're doing."
He looked at Luxa and Henry to see if they were insulted, but both were waiting anxiously for Vicus's reply.
"They know," thought Gregor. "They act tough, but they know we can't get through this by ourselves."
"I do not plan to leave you stranded in the Deadland," said Vicus.
"Oh, great, and we're in the Deadland," said Gregor. "So you're going to, what, draw us a map?"
"No. I have arranged a guide for you," said Vicus.
"A guide?" asked Henry. "A guide?" echoed Luxa.
Vicus took a deep breath as if he was about to begin a long explanation. But then someone interrupted him.
"Well, I prefer to think of myself as a legend, but I suppose guide will do,"
said a deep, world-weary voice from the dark. Gregor shot his flashlight beam toward the sound. Leaning in the mouth of the tunnel was a rat with a diagonal scar across his face. It took just a moment for Gregor to recognize him as the rat Vicus had knocked into the river. Part 3. The Rat. Chapter 19.
"Stay you," cried Vicus, as Luxa, Henry, and Marith sprang up, swords in hand. "Stay you."
The rat regarded the three-armed humans with amusement.
Yes. Stay, you, or I shall be forced to move, and that always puts me in an ill humor, he said languidly.
Luxa and Marith stopped uncertainly, but Henry ignored Vicus's command and lunged at the rat. Without moving another muscle, the rat flicked its tail. It cracked like a whip, knocking the sword from Henry's hand. The blade spun across the stone floor and slammed into the cavern wall. Henry gripped his wrist in pain.
The hardest lesson for a soldier to learn is to obey orders he believes are wrong, said the rat, philosophically. Take care, lad, or you shall end up like me, stripped of any respectable rank and warming your shabby old hide at the fire of your enemies.
The rat nodded at the old man.
Vicus.
Rip-red, said Vicus with a smile. We have just commenced dining. Will you join us?
I thought you'd never ask,
said Rip-red, pushing himself off the wall and slouching over to the fire. He squatted back on his haunches next to Solovet.
My dear Solovet, how kind of you to fly out to greet me, and with a war on, too.
I could scarcely have missed an opportunity to break bread with you, Rip-red, said Solovet.
Oh, come now. You know perfectly well you only tagged along to wheedle information out of me, said Rip-red, and to gloat over your victory at the flames.
I destroyed you, said Solovet with glee. Your army turned tail and ran, howling into the river.
Army? Snorted Rip-red. Why, they were as much an army as I am a butterfly. I'd have stood a better chance fighting with crawlers.
The rat looked at Temp and Tick, who were cowering against the wall, and sighed.
Present company accepted, of course.
Boots frowned and toddled over to Rip-red. She pointed her chubby finger up at him.
You mouse?
Yes, I'm a mouse. Squeak, squeak. Now shoo-shoo back to your little bug friends, said Rip-red, picking up a hunk of dried beef.
He tore off a piece with his teeth and noticed Boots hadn't moved. He pulled back his lips to reveal a row of jagged teeth and gave her a sharp hiss.
Oh!
Said Boots, scurrying to her roaches.
Oh!
Don't do that, said Gregor. The rat turned his glowing eyes on him, and Gregor was shocked by what he saw there. The intelligence, the deadliness, and most surprisingly, the pain. This rat was not like Fanger and Shed. He was much more complicated and much more dangerous. For the first time in the Underland, Gregor felt completely out of his league. If he fought this rat, he wouldn't stand a chance. He would lose. He would be dead.
Ah, this must be our warrior, said Rip-red softly. How very like your daddy you are.
Don't scare my sister, said Gregor, trying to keep his voice steady. She's only a baby.
From what I hear, she's got more guts than the lot of you combined, said Rip-red. Of course, courage only counts when you can count. I'm presuming the rest of you can count, and we'll be screwing your courage to the sticking place any minute now.
The rat glanced around at Luxa, Marith, and Henry, who were keeping their distance. The bats were extending and folding their wings, unsure of what to do.
Well, come on then. Isn't anyone else hungry? I hate dining alone. Makes me feel so unloved.
I did not prepare them, Rip-red, said Vicus.
Clearly, said the rat. Clearly my arrival is an unexpected pleasure.
He went to work on his beef bone, making an awful scraping sound.
Meet you, Rip-red, the gnawer, said Vicus to the group.
He shall be joining the quest as your guide.
There was a quick, breathy sound,
as half of those gathered inhaled sharply. A long pause followed in which no one exhaled. Gregor tried to make sense of what Vicus had announced so calmly. A rat. He was leaving them in the hands of a rat. Gregor wanted to object, but his throat had frozen. Finally, Luxa spoke up in a voice hoarse with hatred.
No, he shall not. We do not travel with rats.
The prophecy of Grey requires it, Luxa, said Solovet. One Nor beside.
Beside could mean anything, snarled Henry. Perhaps we leave the Nor dead beside us.
Perhaps you do, but having witnessed your last attack, I doubt it, said Rip Red,
starting on a wedge of cheese.
We have killed 5 rats since midday, said Luxa.
You mean the idiots that I hand-picked for cowardice and ineptitude?
Oh yes, bravo, your highness. That was a masterly piece of combat,
said Rip Red, his voice dripping with sarcasm.
Do not flatter yourself you have yet fought a rat.
They themselves killed Fangor and Shed, said Marith bravely.
Well, then I stand corrected. Fangor and Shed were excellent fighters. On the rare occasions they were sober, said Ripred. However, I expect they were outnumbered and somewhat thrown by the arrival of our warrior. What say you, warrior? Do you refuse to go with me as well?
Gregor looked into Ripred's mocking, tortured eyes. He wanted to refuse, but if he did, could he ever find his dad? As if following his thoughts, Vicus spoke up.
You need Ripred to guide you to your father. These tunnels are unmapped by humans. You would never find your way without him.
Still, he was a rat. Gregor had only been in the Underland a few days, and he already despised rats. They had killed Luxa's and Henry's parents, imprisoned his father, and almost eaten him and Boots. He felt a kind of power surging through him when he thought of how much he hated them. But if all rats were bad, who was this strange creature staring at him from across the fire, offering to be their guide?
So what's in this for you? Said Gregor to Ripred.
A fair question, said Ripred. Well, warrior, I am planning to overthrow King Gorgor, and I need you to help me.
By doing what? Said Gregor.
I don't know, admitted Ripred. None of us does.
Gregor rose and caught Vicus by the arm.
I have to talk to you alone, he said.
The anger in his voice surprised even himself. Well, he was angry. The rat was not part of what he'd agreed to. This was not what he'd signed on for. Vicus took Gregor's mood in stride. Maybe he had expected it. They walked about 20 yards away from the group.
So how long have you had this plan with the rat? Asked Gregor.
Vicus thought a moment.
I'm not sure exactly. Perhaps 2 or so years. Of course, it was all dependent upon your arrival.
How come you didn't tell me about it before? Demanded Gregor.
I do not believe in giving people more information than they can handle, said Vicus.
Who says I can't handle it? I can handle it, said Gregor, obviously not handling it.
Perhaps you can, at least more easily than Luxa and Henry.
I may well have told you if we had ever finished our discussion of the prophecy of Grey, said Vicus.
No doubt you would have asked. And yes, I may well have told you.
Gregor pulled the prophecy from his pocket and said, Let's finish it now. He searched out the part of the prophecy where they'd left off.
One Nor beside, and one lost up ahead.
So, Ripred is the Nor, and my dad is the one lost up ahead, said Gregor. He read on. And 8 will be left when we count up the dead.
What does that mean? Asked Gregor, pointing to the line.
If you add up all the players in the prophecy, 2 over, 2 under,
two flyers, two crawlers, two spinners, one gnawer, and one lost.
You have 12, said Vicus gravely. By the end of the quest, only 8 will remain alive. 4 will be dead. But no one knows what for.
Oh, said Gregor, stunned. He'd heard the words before, but they only registered now. 4 of us dead.
But 8 alive, Gregor, said Vicus gently. And perhaps a world saved.
Gregor couldn't deal with that part now, wondering who would be left standing at the end of the day. He pushed on to the final stanza of the prophecy. The last who will die must decide where he stands. The fate of the 8 is contained in his hands. So bid him take care, bid him look where he leaps, as life may be death, and death life again reaps.
I don't get this last part, said Gregor.
Nor do I. Nor does anyone. It is very cryptic.
I believe no one will fully understand it until the final moment has arrived, said Vicus.
Gregor, it is not pleasant. It is not easy. But it is essential, what I ask you to do. Essential to you if you wish to find your father. Essential for my people if they are to survive.
Gregor felt his anger ebbing and fear filling the empty spaces it left. He took another tack. I don't want to go with that rat, said Gregor, almost pleading. He'll kill us.
No, you cannot judge Ripred by what you know of other rats. He has wisdom unique in any creature. Things were not always so bad between humans and rats. When Solovet and Ripred and I were younger, we lived in relative peace.
Ripred would see that restored.
But King Gorgor wishes all humans dead, said Vicus.
So you're saying Ripred's a good rat? Said Gregor, choking on the words.
If he were not, would I trust my granddaughter to his care? Asked Vicus.
Your granddaughter? Said Gregor blankly.
Luxa's mother was my daughter. Judith, said Vicus.
You're her grandpa? Why does she call you Vicus? Asked Gregor. These people were so weird and formal. How could he not have known that?
It is our way, said Vicus. Look after her. If this is hard for you, know it is torture for Luxa.
I haven't said I'm going yet, said Gregor. He looked into the old man's eyes. All right, I'm going. Is there anything else I need to know that you haven't told me?
Only this. Despite what I said, I knew you were the warrior from the first moment I spied you, said Vicus.
Thanks, great, that's very helpful, said Gregor. And they returned to the group. Okay, Boots and I are going with the rat. Who else is in?
There was a pause.
Where goes the princess, goes we, said Temp.
What say you, Luxa? Said Vicus.
What can I say, Vicus? Can I return to our people and tell them I withdrew from the quest when our survival hangs in the balance? Said Luxa bitterly. Of course you cannot, Luxa. This is why he times it so, said Henry.
You could choose to... started Vicus.
I could choose... retorted Luxa. Do not offer me a choice when you know none exists.
She and Henry turned their backs on Vicus.
Flyers, said Solovet, as Vicus seemed to have lost the ability to talk.
Aurora and I go with our bonds, muttered Ares.
Then it is settled. Come, Marith. We are needed at home, said Solovet.
A distraught Marith quickly made up packs of food for the members of the quest.
Fly you high, all of you, he said in a strained voice, and climbed on his bat.
Solovet mounted her bat and unrolled her map. While Ripred helped her work out the safest route back to Regalia,
Vicus moved to Henry and Luxa. Neither of them would turn to look at him.
I would not part this way, but I understand your hearts. Perhaps one day you will be able to forgive me this moment. Fly you high, Henry.
Fly you high, Luxa, said Vicus. He waited for a response, but none came. He turned and climbed heavily onto his bat. As miserable as Gregor felt about being dumped with a rat, his heart ached for Vicus. He wanted to scream at Luxa, say something. Don't let your grandpa fly off like this. Four of us aren't coming back. But the words caught in his throat. Part of him wasn't ready to forgive Vicus for abandoning them either.
Fly you high, Gregor the Overlander, said Vicus.
Gregor struggled with how to respond. Should he ignore Vicus? Let him know that none of them, not even an Overlander, could forgive him? Just as he had steeled himself against replying, Gregor thought of the last 2 years, 7 months, and was it 15 days now? There were so many things he wished he'd said to his dad when he'd had the chance, things like how special it was when they went on the roof at night and tried to find stars, or how much he loved it when they took the subway out to the stadium to watch a baseball game, or just that he felt lucky that out of all the people in the world, his dad was his dad. He didn't have room inside him for any more unspoken words. The bats were rising into the air. He only had a second. Fly you high, Vicus, he yelled. Fly you high. Vicus turned back, and Gregor could see tears shining on his cheeks. He lifted up a hand to Gregor in thanks. And then they were gone.